Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to be here with you and so happy to have you here with us. Our guest today is a returning guest. He's been with us several times. It's all about safety. And our guest is Jack Sullivan, who is the Director of Training for the Responder Safety Institute. We're going to talk about today prepping your knowledge, what you need to pay attention to, and also the key facts of TIM organizations. And we'll be telling you about TIM organizations in just a few moments when Jack joins us. If you enjoy this episode of Five Alarm Task Force, you can listen to all our episodes. They're on, most of them will be on your favorite podcast platform. But if you can't find them, then all you have to do is go to our website, www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. And when you get to the homepage, just use the horizontal menu bar and select podcast. And that will bring you to our entire library of all our audio podcasts. And of course, our videos, now that we've been doing our videos since the pandemic, those can be found on our YouTube channel. Guess what the name of that channel is? The numeral 5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. If you have any problems accessing our other episodes, please just drop us a line to dalmathprod@outlook.com and we'll look into it and help you get squared away as quickly as possible. Now, while you're on our website, you may want to sign up for our newsletter. We send only about 3 or 4 out for the entire year. And if you should ever decide you want to unsubscribe, all you have to do is send us an email, again, to our regular email address, dalmathprod@outlook.com. And in the subject line, please put the word unsubscribe. As soon as we receive it, we'll take you off the list and you will not be bothered by our emailing by any shape, manner, or form. Now, we want to again, as always, thank our followers, our supporters on Facebook. And I'm going to have to add this time, it's not just Facebook. It is on Instagram, on Twitter /X, whatever name you want to call it, on LinkedIn. We are so grateful for the vast numbers of you who are following us, promoting us, sharing our information, our podcast, etc. We really do appreciate it. It means the world to us. There's no way in the world we could ever have enough money to advertise our podcast as well as you do with just simple shares and emails or talking with somebody, whatever. Thank you for all your help. Now, if you like to listen to your podcast on a podcast platform, you need to know that many of those platforms have an algorithm when people search for a podcast, and the algorithm includes how many positive votes or positive comments the podcast has received or how many not good marks that you receive from the public. But what's important is we need your help with just leaving a couple of dot numbers, which is 3-star, 4-star, 5-star, or a couple of sentences in a comment of why you feel our show is good and deserving that should be easier to find. With listeners in over 42 countries over the past couple of years, sometimes it's hard to find us, and just let us know and we'll be sure to take care of it for you. And that's it. That's our business for today. So, as you know, we'll have a couple of public service announcements, and right after that, we'll be back with our guest, Jack Sullivan from Responder Safety Institute, right after these words. As always, please stay tuned. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 Thermography Certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training LLC? Well, here's part of their upcoming calendar. May 13th through the 16th, Insight Training will be providing their custom 32-hour train-the-trainer thermal imaging program for the host organization of South Montgomery Fire Department in Texas. This program consists of 4 days that are divided into one-half day of lecture and one-half day of live fire thermal imaging training. The sequence of the course is as follows. Day 1, Introduction to Tactical Thermal Imaging. Day 2, Size Up and Go, No-Go Decision Making. Day 3, Enhanced Search Methodology and Enhanced Stream Placement. And Day 4, Final Tests and Implementation Procedures. This program is our most popular and the most involved of all of our programs. The host organization receives complete access to our complete library of resources, an instructor manual in PDF format, a 300-gigabyte Google Drive folder, and more. This program will be offered from May 13th to May 16th, 2024, with a cadre Insight Training instructors. The class size is limited to maintain a 5-to-1 student-to-instructor ratio. South Montgomery County Fire Department. M is in Michael, C is in Charlie, E is in Echo, S is in Sam, D is in Delta. Number 827900 Robinson Road, Conroe, C-O-N-R-O-E, Texas, 77385. Telephone number 346-573-5254. May 21st to 22nd, Introduction to Tactical Thermal Imaging Training. And this will be providing their Introduction to Tactical Thermal Imaging 8-hour live fire training at Guilford Technical Community College. Now, by the way, I went to Guilford Technical College in Greensboro, my days back then, for my EMT training on May 21st and May 22nd. This course will be repeated each day for 2 days. Please see the flyer for more details. And May 25th to the 28th and 29th, Treasure Valley Falls, Idaho, live fire thermal imaging training. Insight Training will be providing 2 8-hour identical days of Introduction to Tactical Thermal Imaging Training. This event will be held on May 28th and May 29th. Registration details will be released soon. Please be sure to check their website, InsightTrainingLLC.com, or their Facebook page for registration and additional details. Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for TIC training. The Firehouse Tribune has expanded, now bringing you podcasts, presentations, and training blogs. The Firehouse Tribune is an innovative way for emergency services professionals to interact, share ideas, learn, and train. We are inspired by those who came before us and built a path for us to share knowledge and experience with the rest of the emergency services world, where life experiences and training come together. Check out our podcasts, Station Talk, and the 5-Tool Firefighter Podcast. Want us to speak at your department or event? Reach out to us to set up workshops at your firehouse or virtual event on topics including the 5-Tool Firefighter, 5 Key Attributes of the Well-Rounded Firefighter, and 6 Tips to Guide the New Fire Officer. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. For more info, please visit www.thefirehousetribune.com. or email us at fhtribunepodcast@gmail.com. The new Firehouse Tribune Services, where we live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We're firefighters. We're law enforcement, but like everyone else, we have our aches and pains, sometimes from the job and sometimes not. We realize there are risks with this job. However, sometimes something is wrong with us and we don't know it. Now, what do we do? Well, LifeScan Wellness Centers are dedicated to saving America's heroes. For most fire and police organizations, LifeScan Wellness Centers will send one of their mobile teams to assess every member of your department with complete and complex physical exams and blood work. Using state-of-the-art medical equipment, LifeScan staff members provide a multi-procedural exam, including cardiac stress tests, basic lab results, and ultrasound exams. LifeScan Wellness exams have saved the lives of dozens of firefighters and police officers across the country. They have found tumors, aortic bulges, lung problems, and more, many of which were asymptomatic. However, early detection allowed most of these colleagues to have their personal medical professionals mitigate the health issue that otherwise might have led to a darker time. For more information, please visit their website at lifescanwellness.com. Remember, LifeScan Wellness Centers, saving the lives of America's heroes. Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to be here with you and happy to have you here with us. And we are privileged to bring back this guest who speaks to us, and he's been on the show several times before, and he would host a speaker at one of our webinars. But Jack Sullivan, who is the education director for the Responder Safety Institute, always teaches us how to be safer first responders, how to be safer drivers in our own personal cars. Because as you all know, there are a gazillion times when you're on your way someplace and you hear the sirens, can't quite see them, so you don't know, do I turn to the left, do I turn to the right, what do I do next? I hear the noises getting, the air horns are going, and you're not really ready. Why? Because probably you haven't paid attention. Every state has a sign up, all 50 states, you have to move over for stop emergency vehicles. Moreover, it'll be better if you just move over to the right. Okay, that's the key. You will soon have technology in your cars, in your infotainment systems, from one of several companies that are actually able to transpond a warning of an incident ahead of you right on your infotainment system. So you get a much earlier warning that gives you more time to react safely. So our guest, well, so happy to welcome him back, is Jack Sullivan. He is the director of training at the Emergency Responder Safety Institute. Jack joined the Volunteer Fire Service in 1972 and eventually served the Paoli, Pennsylvania Fire Company as deputy chief. He also served as a volunteer firefighter in Chesterfield County, Virginia, and as a lieutenant and safety officer for Lionville, Pennsylvania Fire Company. Although retired from active firefighting, he currently serves as the director of training for the Emergency Responder Safety Institute, developing and delivering online and in-person training programs about the broad subject of roadway incident safety and traffic incident management. Jack is a member of the Safety, Health, and Survival section of the International Association of Fire Chiefs, a member of the Fire Department Safety Officers Association, and a member of the International Association of Fire Service Instructors. He is a principal member of the NFPA Technical Committee for Traffic Incident Management Professional Qualifications that developed NFPA 1091. Standard for Traffic Incident Management Professional Qualifications. Jack is a subject matter expert on roadway incident operations and emergency personnel safety and promotes proactive strategies and tactics for protecting emergency workers from being struck by vehicles while working on roads and highways. And we're not just talking about first responders like fire, police, and EMS. We're talking about others, the recovery drivers, tow truck drivers, our roadway guide, so to speak, that the major highways have on them. And so we want to make sure everybody is say, Jack teaches traffic incident management and responder safety workshops for multidiscipline emergency responder groups for the Emergency Responder Safety Institute. And he is a master instructor for the FHWA Traffic Incident Management Train the Trainer workshops being presented nationwide. Jack has presented classes and workshops at many national, regional, and statewide fire service conferences, and has also delivered webinars and online training classes for various fire service, safety, and transportation organizations, associations, committees, and events, including IAFC, Fire Engineering, Firehouse, IFC, Lexpol, FHWA, and others. Jack, it is an honor and privilege, as I mentioned, to have you back with us once again.
Thanks, Steve. Good morning.
And good morning.
I gotta tell you, I'm exhausted after listening to all that. Not too many hours left at the end of the day sometimes.
Right. I understand that. But you know what? It's all deserving because you and Todd, who you were working with and still work with, really provided a wonderful guide, simple teaching, but a guide how we must act when we're responding to an on roadway. I don't say super highway. I don't say two lane highway. You're on a roadway. I don't care where it is. If it's a 12 lane interstate or if it's two lane road in your neighborhood, we have to know, number one, how to be better drivers. Number two, we have to learn to be more alert drivers and not let ourselves be lost in the swaying of the music that we're listening to, or God forbid, you don't run videos in your car while you're driving, please, under any circumstances. Yeah, the kids in the back, great. Up front, no videos. And having, I guess, one of the biggest words we have, most important words, is from Chief Rich Gassaway, situational awareness. We have to keep our heads on a swivel, because if we don't, what we don't see just might kill us. Jack, let me ask you this question. Approximately how many struck, here we are, the end of April, end of the fourth month of 2024. How many struck bys have we suffered in 2024, as far as your records show?
What we usually do is track fatalities. And unfortunately, we just recorded the 18th struck by fatality yesterday of a police officer who was struck while he was working a traffic stop.
Right.
So that's number 18 for 2024.
Right. And that's, when you think about that, out of 4 months, okay, we have 18. So 4 months gives us 16 weeks. And what Jack just told us puts us in a dangerous front of the curve. 18 certified struck by fatalities in just 16 weeks. So we're talking basically just over one per week.
Yeah, and Steve, don't forget, it's important to remember that those are just the fatalities.
Right.
The number of actual incidents where emergency responders have been struck at incident scenes and either their vehicles damaged and sometimes total, or the responder themselves injured. And some of those injuries can be life-changing injuries, sometimes amputations and things like that that can completely alter a person's life. There is no system in place, has been no system in place for the last 20 years to specifically pull out that information on the number of emergency responders that have been struck and injured, how many of their vehicles have been struck and damaged or destroyed, and how many fatalities. So we've done our best to track the fatalities for a long time. Over the last 5 years, there's been 251 emergency responders struck and killed at incident scenes, plus the 18 that we've seen so far this year. We're still trying to get a handle on the injuries and property damage, and it would help us tell a better story if we had that information. We do have a page now as part of the website at respondersafety.com for anybody to report a struck by incident of any sort, whether it's an injury, whether it's just property damage, whether it's even just a close call in some cases, or a fatality. There's a page now that takes about 2 to 4 minutes to fill out the information, simple check marks all the way through for the most part, to give us an idea of what's going on out there. And we need more people to participate in that to get better information at this point.
Sure. Well, if anybody's watching On Patrol Live on Friday nights and Saturday nights, you can see exactly all too often on this show twice a week how often there are struck bys that causes damage at homes, property, etc. There was one either last week or the week before, well, where a kid driving a stolen car pulled down a huge tree, struck it with a, I think it was driving a Humvee or a big SUV, and just knocked the crap out of that, and it fell just on the side of the house. So it doesn't have to be a direct personal injury, folks. It can be any impact, which is the result of an auto. You know, we used to call them MVAs, right, Jack, in the old days?
Oh, no, we refer to them as crashes these days.
Right, MVCs, crashes, right. Because so, I guess in our early days when we were both starting out in the fire service, MVA, we thought we gave people the benefit of the doubt and say, well, it was an accident. They didn't mean to do it. We've lost that base now. That's gone. Because when you see how people drive, how they speed, not using directional signals, which, boy, irks my butt. I can't stand that, especially when I'm ready to enter an intersection one way or the other, and I'm waiting for them to show me their aim and direction, and they don't. They just, or they come from the left lane, the left turn lane, innermost to the curb, and then they pull across four lanes because they decide they want to make a right turn. And I've seen three of those in the last probably 6 to 8 months where their intended location was not reachable. We'll put it that way. So the concept of Tim, and well, even before we get to that, you and Todd and other terrific members who write the code and the programs, the software that's available on the website. How do we better get our messages across to the average driver?
It's an interesting question, and it's not one clear answer. So one of the movements that we've seen in the last few years develop are parents who have lost teenagers in auto crashes under a variety of different circumstances have realized that they can play an important role in getting the message across to the younger drivers, those that are just getting their driver's license. Maybe they're just getting their learner's permit. They have a story to tell about one of their peer group, another teenager, who may or may not have been doing things the way they should have been at the time, that were either struck and killed in a crash, or in some cases may have been a distracted driver themselves and caused the crash. They have a message to tell, a personal story, and personal stories related to this subject go a long way to get people's attention. So some of these parents are now advocates for preventing distracted driving, especially amongst teens. One of the things that we're dealing with these days is that the younger generation has grown up with a smartphone in their hand from almost day one. And unfortunately, it doesn't change when they get behind the wheel of a motor vehicle. It's pretty tough to ignore that phone and the little dings and dings and everything else that it's making as time goes on and just concentrate on the act of driving. And these parents who have suffered a loss, tragic losses, play a key role in starting to get that message across to the younger generation. I'll be honest, I've always said that the younger drivers out there today are growing up watching their parents do bad driving habits, and they learn from watching their parents. We've got a number of different efforts underway right now to prevent distracted driving and to encourage the younger generation to help coach their parents when they're driving. And one of the things that we've touted over the last few years is a program that we put together to teach younger children how to identify unsafe behavior in a vehicle that they're traveling in, and telling the adult who might be driving that, mommy, you don't make me feel safe when you look at your phone while you're driving, just to bring it to the attention of the adults that are out there. We have to do a better job of teaching new drivers. The driving laws in some states literally permit anybody to walk in the door and get a driver's license, maybe with doing a quick eye test and maybe taking a verbal test or a computer-based test to see if they know any of the information that's in the driver's manual or handbook. And then off they go to drive without any more supervision. We've got to do a better job of training our drivers and just all of the things that you just talked about, the use of turn signals right up to what do you do when you're being approached by an emergency vehicle traveling to an emergency scene, and what do you do when you approach an emergency scene where the vehicles are already parked and stationary while the emergency responders do whatever work has to be done at the time. We've got to do a better job of getting that information across to the folks that are learning how to drive and just beginning to drive as part of their personal lives.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I know that all three boys in my family, and I'm the middle of the three, my older brother is 5 years older, my younger brother is 2.5 years younger. We all were very lucky to have a great driver's ed teacher, Bob Anastas, who was the founder of Students Driving Drunk. And he was a hockey coach, not at our school, but he's hockey coach at another school. And the kids, his team went down in a van, and he drove his car down to the scene, and the team won. And then without Bob knowing, they stopped and got a case of beer. And within 22 minutes, four of the six were dead. And Bob, one of the greatest, nicest teachers, taught ancient medieval history, great teacher in driver's ed, never yelled at you unless it was a joke, but always guided you to be a safe, not just an adequate driver, a safe and a smart driver. And some kids say, well, he's too strict. Okay, well then don't get him for your teacher. You can wait till somebody else comes on and becomes the teacher. But right now, Mr. Nassus is the only one we have. And he was just, he never jumped down your throat, but he was there to guide you so that you learn from him before you learn it the wrong way on the road. And those are the kind of people we still need. You know, you and I have been driving for longer than some of our viewers are and our listeners are. But the fact is that it's still very important. And so if we don't, you know, it's reminds me, my wife had to go down to the airport to pick up a guest coming in for the Passover holiday. And my wife said, I was going like 65 and there were cars flying by me on the turnpike. I said, honey, I set my speed for 75 miles an hour, and I'm still the turtle on the turnpike because they're all blowing past me. I can't even get to see the license plate number. And this is what, and I don't mean to castigate where it doesn't belong, but I see a lot of these problems coming with more expensive and more sporty cars. So,
oh, absolutely. The cars of today have far more capability than the drivers sitting in behind the wheel. No question about it.
Right. And so we have to learn that we are not the only ones on the road when we drive. Along with one neighbor next door, it's not just the two of us driving. It is tens and hundreds of thousands of people all driving at the same time. Especially, we know the busy hours on your way to work and on your way home from work. That's it. But if you don't grab a hold of the information we're talking about today, and then, God forbid, you find yourself in a terrible MVC, the first thing that's going to come back and kick you, you're going to kick yourself in the butt, is because you didn't pay attention how to be a safe driver. You wanted to be what you wanted to be, and that was more important than anything else. Well, tell that to the family of the two children you just killed when you blew the red light because you were checking your phone. Tell them you're sorry and see how much it consoles them. And having had to work with families, and I've officiated funerals of kids, sadly, teenagers, older teens, young adults, it's never easy, especially if they're members of your own synagogue or church and you know the family. You've probably known the kid for a while. And now we see what happens. So what we're going to do, folks, we're going to now try to take you on the magical mystery tour that you can be a safer driver. You can learn how to be safer, learn what to look for, and learn how to avoid. And at the same time, maybe you're going to learn how to help somebody. And that would be the cherry on top of the sundae. Not only do you learn about it, but you actually put it into action to help somebody else. Or maybe you have to help yourself. But the only way you can do that is not by just listening to this podcast today or any of the other ones we've done, Respond to Safety Institute, but you have to learn from them. Okay? There are free programs on the website. You don't have to pay. Sit down, watch them. You get to grade yourself as well on some of them. You want to learn? Put yourself back in school. Adult school, but put yourself back there. Because imagine your kids driving. Imagine if your kids mimic the way you drive when they're in the car. Sharp turns, stop shorts. That's what they're learning from you. You need to show them you and they have to be better at this. So, Jack, let's jump from here now into into the concept of educating, guiding people who say, you know what, maybe they're right. Maybe it's time I did better with my driving. And especially if half your wallet is stuffed, not with ones or tens, but with little yellow tickets that say appear in court on this date at this time in front of Judge Mary Smith or Judge any other judge. But it'll be a lot easier to sit at your computer at home and study and learn and put into practice what you learn than learning it the hard way after an accident or a crash. So let's keep that in mind. Go ahead, Jack.
Steve, I guess we've talked on and touched on a little bit of preventing distracted driving. We need to do a better job of training our drivers, and we need to do a better job of educating people how to react to emergency vehicles that are on the roadway. Newer vehicles are much more soundproof than the vehicles that maybe you and I started driving back in the, well, way back. Let's just leave it at that. And unfortunately, sometimes the emergency warning devices that are typically used by emergency vehicles these days are not as effective as they might have been in the past. People are not as observant of flashing lights approaching them from the rear. It may take a while before they hear any part of the siren. And then sometimes it's difficult to tell which direction the siren is coming from. We need to do a better job of educating people how to react when they do realize that there's an emergency vehicle approaching them from behind. Having been in that situation, we've seen all kinds of reactions from drivers who literally stop wherever they are in the middle of the roadway and kind of freeze. They're not sure which way to go or what to do at that point. There are the drivers that try to speed up and get to wherever they're going ahead of us. That causes more problems when they reach the next traffic light that might be red for their direction. And then fortunately, there are an awful lot of drivers who do exactly what they're supposed to do, and that's slow down and move to the right, pull off to the side as far as you can, and come to a stop and let the emergency vehicle pass safely. The second thing is that once the emergency vehicle gets to the incident scene that they're going to, we need to make sure that people know how to react to parked emergency vehicles working at an incident scene, whether it's a police car and a traffic stop, a fire truck, an ambulance, a tow truck, a safety service patrol of some sort. One of the messages that we've been trying to spread the word on for the last 10 years probably is that we need to move over and give those emergency workers room to work, give them a little bit of space. Most of us, all of the states at this point, including the District of Columbia, now have some sort of a move over law, as we refer to them, that basically says when you approach an emergency scene with vehicles with flashing lights on them, that if possible, you should move over at least one lane away from the activity. If you can't do that, and there are an awful lot of circumstances where there is no way for you to move over, then what we want people to do is to slow down. Slow down as they approach the emergency scene. Watch out for emergency workers that might be working around the emergency vehicles with the flashing lights, and proceed by the incident scene at a slow rate of speed. That way they can react properly if somebody should step out from behind an obscure area of a fire truck or an ambulance or something like that, trying to get to a compartment on their emergency vehicle to get a tool or a piece of equipment or whatever the case may be. If you're moving at a slower pace, you'll be able to react appropriately to that. It seems like a relatively simple thing, but unfortunately, people don't react the way we want them to in situations where the move over law would require them to either move over or slow down to pass the emergency scene. So those are just the first basic things that we need to address.
Right. Several times in that last discussion, you mentioned a word that I'm sure was near and dear to your heart and me in those early days, which was react.
Yeah.
And if you're too young to remember what React was, it was a volunteer band across the country of people who have either base station CB radios, or they had CB radios in their car. And what our job was is, number one, not to get in the way of anybody. That was first and foremost the rule. I know our chapter director said, you don't get in the way of anybody else, because otherwise you're wasting your time and wasting their time. But we would either come across, or we'd be driving around and somebody told us there was an accident here. We'd radio that in to one of the base stations, and those people would call the police or fire department or EMS, whatever was necessary. And I guess I started when I graduated high school back in 1949. And I can tell you that it was part of my indoctrination, getting involved with safety, because I had just, in my senior year, I just graduated with advanced life support with the Red Cross. And I had a little BLS pack in my car even back then, and try to help until the authorities can get there and take over. And then our job was to keep traffic flowing as best as we can in a safe manner. And so there was all this radio communication, but our radios didn't interfere because they were just CBs. They weren't interfering with any of the, even the VHF band, because we really didn't have a lot of UHF bands though way back then. But our signals at their bandwidth did not get in, interfere with the radio signals being used by fire rescue, law enforcement, or EMS. And so we actually had people across the country looking to help other people in a bad situation, not to chastise them, not to write tickets. We didn't do any of that. All we did was to make sure whoever was in the car was okay. Anybody outside, could they have been struck or anything like that? Is there any damage that could be dangerous to the facility? And we did that for years. And it was a great and very relatively inexpensive hobby, but it's one of those hobbies that helps you do something for your community.
Yeah, I can tell you, as I travel around the country, there are still REAC groups around the country, primarily in the Midwest, it seemed like, that are operating under that name and still trying to help out in a variety of different situations. So not as many by any means, but there's still a
Right.
few out there.
Right. So, and the fact is that radio, using a mic in one hand, and then they had the foot mics, foot switches come out from mics about halfway through that adventure. But we couldn't pick up a phone to call. We didn't have them, but we wouldn't have wanted to. All we have to do, the channel's already set on our radio, so all you have to do is pick up a mic and just call it in. And again, in the training to become REAC, if you were a driver, you had to learn how to be a safe driver around emergency scenes, so you didn't get in the way. You don't prevent the rescuers or those people necessary to get to the scene and render care. And I'll tell you this. I'll tell you something. I guess because it's just part of me and who I am. But just since I've been out of the fire service, which was 85 when I got hurt, I have always kept a full BLS kit with ropes, power gloves, etc. in my car. My family estimates that with at least one of them in the car with me, and there have been plenty of times I responded because I just happened to be there by myself, that I responded as the first or second first responder on scene over 200 times. And people say, "What about your back?" I said, "I don't care about my back when I have to, if there's a car overturn and there's somebody trapped. I'll do whatever has to be done to just help stabilize them." And I have the throwaway collars. I invested in a lot of stuff because I want to be able to give somebody that I have to help the same level that I had when I was still an active volunteer firefighter and did it then. And it's just strange, though, as of late, let's say in the last 5 to 8 years, how many of those scenes I've had to reply to were because of a large word. I'm not sure it's actually a noun anymore, but it's called thumbacity. Okay. Thumbacity, because you don't need to be stupid. You don't need to be vain. There's no ego when you drive. You may think there is, but there is no ego when you drive. The only thing you should be focusing on is driving safely and avoiding anything that gets in the way of that safely.
Yeah, and Steve, let me take this opportunity to talk about the fact that one of the trends that we've seen over the last 5 to 10 years is the number of trained emergency responders who have come upon a roadway incident of some sort while they're driving their personal vehicle and have stopped to assist in some way, shape, or form, whether it's a car crash of some sort, a vehicle fire, maybe it's somebody disabled on the side of the road and struggling to change a tire or something like that. We've had a number of struck by fatalities involving off-duty emergency responders who have done exactly what you just described, where they stopped to help because, for the most part, the emergency responder community are what I call type A personalities. We'd like to be action-oriented. We'd like to take steps to fix things. We're kind of built into our DNA to help people that are in distress in some way, shape, or form. But we've noticed that in a number of cases, even this year, we've had at least one of the struck by fatalities involve somebody who was off duty, who stopped to assist, and consequently was struck and killed by a vehicle during that effort. And we caution folks to keep that in mind. If you don't have the appropriate equipment, if you don't have the protection of a large piece of emergency vehicle behind you to protect you from oncoming traffic, you've got to think long and hard about how you're going to address that incident soon. And in some cases, the safest thing might be to pull off someplace safe and notify the appropriate local authorities so that they can respond to take care of the incident. So we've got to use some caution if we don't have our regular day-to-day duty gear with us on emergency vehicles with the warning lights and things like that, how we approach an incident that may have just occurred that we haven't even stumbled upon.
Yeah, I know. That's what got me to put lights in my car. Now, as a non-active, volunteer firefighter, I can't put red lights in the front of my car. But I did have, I do have in the windshield a Phoenix dual light, amber and white, and in the back, hanging down from the thatch to the roof, facing out the rear window of the SUV. I have red and yellow with changeable patterns. And on the license plate and the grill in front, license plate in the back is and I just, it just to me, you made a good point, but I have to say that I've thought about that. I've talked about that with my wife and my daughters. And the fact is, I did it when I was a firefighter and didn't always go out on the rescue or the engine, because I happened when I was just driving on the way to the firehouse and there was an accident. But I always have to remember just what you said, that while I do have, I have bright DOT approved lime green vest with the reflective stripes. The gloves have them. And I have a good amount of lighting. I have electric flares that I carry with me as well. I've even taught my wife and my daughter, one of my daughters who bought in a pack of those, how to set those flares out to push cars away from the scene. Direct them over, so they're pretty good with that. But the fact is that if every one of you who are watching this on the video form on YouTube, or you're listening to the audio form on your favorite podcast platform, this information that we're giving you today is only a guide, because if you're going to want to help, and we're going to talk about these TIMS across the country. We're going to talk about what they are, how they work, and how you can play a role to make the roads around you just a little bit safer. You can't change your entire town, city, or county, or state just because you're listening to this podcast. But, you put a grain of sand under the saddle that goes on a camel, just one grain of sand, and for the first couple of miles the camel's fine, but right after that he starts wiggling and the seat that you're sitting in is kind of slopping back and forth. That's what's going to happen if you don't make the full effort. This is not something you can do part way. Well, I'll do part one now and I'll do part two next year when I have more time. That's not going to work. So now we're going to try to give you some direction and understanding of the role that you can play in your community, in your state, perhaps, to make driving safer for other motorists and for you too. If you're going to be try to help it, you need to drive more carefully and pay more attention to what you do. So Jack, you know what? Why don't we take the break here at 10:47? And we'll take a break here. Folks, if you're watching the video, well, you know, nothing's going to happen on the video. You're not going to see anything there. If you're listening to our audio podcast, you'll know that we have a couple of public information spots and some other safety little reminders for those of us as first responders. Then we'll be back with our guest, Jack Sullivan, as we talk about how can we play a role in our communities to lessen struck-bys, to enhance our attention when we're driving, to pay attention to the things that need to be attended to and not something that's just for fun. So we'll be right back with our guest, Jack Sullivan, right after these words. As always, please stay tuned. The tone sounds and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay, and head for the open front door, where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything! What the hell are you thinking? You see, it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face piece on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go to. Face peace on.
You show up for your shift, but you're not feeling 100%. You greet your colleagues with a smile, but just can't put your finger on it. I'll shake it off in an hour, you think to yourself. You take a couple of nothing runs, but you're still not feeling any better when you get back to the barn. You throw some cold water on your face and think, yeah, that's more like it. And you head back to the day room. With training scheduled for after lunch, you make yourself comfortable in one of the recliners, but as you sit there, you feel ill. You start to sweat, and you feel nauseous. There's a pain in your left arm that you've never had before. Hey guys, you call out. I'm not feeling well. And your voice trails, your eyes close, and the darkness surrounds you. More firefighters die from cardiovascular health issues than any other reason. Don't let self-pride get in the way of taking care of yourself. See your doctor on a regular basis, and be sure to advise him or her that you're a firefighter. Don't be a statistic. Be a healthy firefighter with a long career. For more information, visit the IAFF, NVFC, or IAFC SHS websites.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy. I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on. There's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses, but we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
Hello and welcome back to this episode of Vive Alum Task Force. My guest today is Jack Sullivan. He is the lead instructor, director of training for the Responder Safety Institute. He teaches everyone from firefighters who are driving a tiller truck. Maybe it has a 110-foot ladder on it. And it has somebody driving in the back. I think all of us little boys and some of us little girls, when we were that young, we wanted to drive that tiller until the first time you see you had to try to do it. And it is not easy. It goes against everything you learn about turning and driving. But the fact is that we're in this segment of the show, we are going to give you a pretty decent, quick education about how to be a better driver and the concept of TIMS and why you might want to be, might want to consider being a member of a TIM committee in your community or in your state. So, Jack, let's get into the concept of TIM. We talked about how we try to educate our young drivers when they're taking driver's ed or try to guide people sometimes. And you know what? I've even come across terrific law enforcement officers who don't give a ticket for everything. Sometimes they prefer to educate the driver. and not give him a ticket, because if he educates them and there's no ticket, he feels there's going to be more buy-in. Because then, you know, if he gives you, okay, well, here's a $125 fine. Well, that's it. You don't care about it anymore. He's trying to help me, and the next thing he does, he makes me pay $125 at the court. No, that's not what this is about. This is about educating you in an effort to save your life and the lives of those who drive near you, who walk near you, whether it's in front of your house or if it's downtown. Okay, you walk on the sidewalks. If you're walking on sidewalks, you better keep an eye out for what's going on the street as well. Doesn't just, cars don't stay just on the roadways anymore. So let's talk about this and see what we can share with our viewers and listeners, how they can not only improve themselves, but help their communities.
Steve, in the interest of full disclosure, I have to admit, I have never had the opportunity to drive or even ride in a tractor-drawn aerial device of any sort. The departments that I was in, the aerial device that we had was snorkel.
Right. You've been there.
It drives like a regular truck. So I want to make sure that we're full disclosure there.
Okay.
I think what we were trying to talk about were traffic incident management committees and the way that they can help with this overall mission of not only protecting responders on the roadway, but all roadway users, which is important. And one of the things that we preach is that whatever we do at a roadway incident, we want to make sure that we're not setting somebody else up for a secondary crash of some sort,
right,
and try to do things the right way. So TIMP committees are much more prevalent now than they were 10 or 15 years ago, but we still have areas where there are no TIMP committees, traffic incident management committees, where representatives from all of the different disciplines who respond to roadway incidents gather together on a periodic basis. I'd say the most typical TIMP committees that I know about and have worked with in some cases are meeting on about a quarterly basis right now. There are some that are much more active, and there are even some that meet on a monthly basis. Sometimes it varies. They might meet more frequently if there's a special event or a major construction project being anticipated in an area. There's a little bit more collaboration and coordination that needs to happen. They might meet more frequently, but the vast majority, for the most part, are meeting anywhere from 2 to 4 times a year. It's important that we have representatives of all of the agencies show up at these meetings to represent not only their agency's input on whatever the topics of conversation are at the time, but also to make sure that others understand their concerns from their agency's standpoint, their discipline, about things that they've encountered and what everybody needs to work on in a collaborative type fashion. So these TIMP committees generally have representatives from the Department of Transportation, maybe Public Works, the law enforcement community, the fire service, emergency medical services, the towing and recovery community. In those areas where the safety service patrols or maybe subcontractors for the local DOT, they may send representatives. Dispatchers that work for emergency services that take the 911 calls when they come in are a very important representative to have involved in these meetings. And anybody else who gets involved with responding to roadway incidents of any sort, I had the opportunity to do some train-the-trainer classes up in the state of New Jersey, and I was surprised and yet pleased to see that some of the representatives that were in those training classes were from the public utilities, from the electric company, from the gas company, from the water utility. They were invited to participate in the class because think about it. In some cases, these crashes that we're responding to might involve some of these utilities and the infrastructure. And those are the folks that we need at the scene. How often have we had an electrical issue that requires a call to the fire department? The fire department gets there and we're looking at the situation. We can't do anything about it until the electric company gets there to make the area safe so that we can take care of whatever the problem is itself. So public utilities very often get represented at these meetings too, which is an excellent idea. I'd like to see more of that across the country. The idea of these meetings is for people to get to meet each other, for starters, ahead of time. We've always said that the worst time to exchange business cards is at 2 o'clock in the morning at a motor vehicle crash on an interstate or a highway of some sort. We want to know who these people are beforehand. And this is one of those ways that we get to meet the other players in the other agencies, is at these periodic meetings of the TIM committee. And we recommend that as part of the TIM committee, that it's the same people representing your agency or discipline that attend those meetings on a regular basis. It does no good to have a different state trooper show up at each of the meetings that has no idea at all what the discussions or concerns have been in previous meetings and doesn't expect to be at any future meetings. We want the same people to show up, and we want those people to be at some level of authority and responsibility in their agency. So we don't want the lowest firefighters showing up to represent the fire department. What we want are one of the chief officers or one of the company officers, a training officer, a safety officer, somebody like that, to represent the department, who can speak on behalf of the department to represent their best interests and what their concerns are. Once we get these people together, we want them to talk about practices and procedures to make sure that everybody's on the same page. We want them to talk about communications and terminology. I had one class that I taught that involved a large bridge over the Potomac River. And it wasn't until we got to the tabletop set session as part of the training class that we realized that the responding agencies from both sides of the bridge were in different counties. And those different counties actually used different terminology to describe what lanes of the highway they were operating in. And it wasn't until we did the tabletop session that we understood that they had used different terminology. And if they're approaching an incident on the bridge coming from two different directions, using different terminology, it made it difficult to get apparatus in the appropriate location when they responded. So the communications and terminology is important. Training is important to make sure that everybody's up to date on the current standards and regulations and codes that might be out there. Here we are in 2024, and the Federal Highway Administration just published their most recent edition of the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices that has new information that responders need to be aware of as they work incident scenes. States change laws and responsibilities in some cases, and we need to be up to date on that. So the training, the practices and procedures are all subjects that should be covered in these regular TIM meetings. After action reviews. I'm a big fan of after action reviews, but I think one of the things that we've seen over time is that we tend to do after action reviews only on those incidents where things don't go as well as we'd like them to. If the incident scene didn't get handled the way that we think it should have, we tend to do an after action review. Very few times do we do after action reviews when everything works well and the coordination is good. Situation gets handled very quickly and efficiently. Everybody kind of pats themselves on the back and goes about their business. I encourage the agencies that are participating in these TIM committees to use some of those well-run incidents for an after-action review. And the reason that we encourage that is for positive reinforcement. Positive reinforcement goes a long way. If we can point out the things that people did at those smooth-run incidents and reinforce that that's why the incident was effective and handled efficiently, that goes a long way. And these after action reviews are one of the methodologies that we recommend, is using tabletop exercises with the little cars and trucks drawn out with the roadway environment that you were working on to make sure that everybody can visualize what was happening, whether it was something that needs to be improved or whether it was something that worked really well. Let's make sure that we're using that positive reinforcement piece. And then the last thing that usually comes up is special events or construction projects that might be underway. And it's not the construction itself that the emergency responders in the TIM committee are concerned about. It's how are they going to handle an incident that occurs in a new construction zone. Anybody who's traveled through some of these large construction projects on interstate highways, for example, know that it's common practice these days to establish a safe work zone for the workers who are doing the actual construction work using barrier walls. In some parts of the country, we refer to them as Jersey walls. I made the mistake of using that term in a training class I was doing in the Midwest at one point, and had several people raise their hand and say, "What's a Jersey wall?" Well, for a guy from Philadelphia, a Jersey wall was a concrete barrier that went around a construction site. But for the folks out in the Kansas City area, they never heard that term before. So we need to make sure that everybody understands what those barrier walls are and the fact that that narrows down the lane. So where we very often have a shoulder to work on at a lot of roadway and highway incidents in a construction work zone, that might not be possible. Access to the incident itself might be extremely difficult because of the construction activity, the narrowing of lanes, the traffic congestion that happens after the incident occurs. There are a lot of things to be discussed about how we're going to handle incidents within a construction zone. And of course, special events bring larger crowds, more traffic, more incidents in heavy traffic conditions. It very often requires more equipment, more personnel, maybe a different approach than we usually have. All of these things can be worked out, discussed ahead of time, and plans made during these team committees. So those are the major reasons for these team committees to meet on a regular basis and to promote what we've always said about traffic incident management is that the idea is to bring everybody together to improve communication, cooperation, collaboration, and coordination at these roadway incidents to not only protect the emergency responders, but also the other roadway users that might be in the area and traveling through the incident scene, and make sure that everybody goes home at the end of the day safe.
Exactly. And you brought up this from the point. You brought up the fact of after action review. I started in video early on because my junior high school and high school had put in a full black and white television studio and radio studio. And I got into that and I loved it. And so when I got into my first apartment in the Greensboro area, we had had a couple of big fires. And I told the chief, I said, look, if you want me to bring my equipment out, because I blown out my knee so I couldn't do some fighting for a while. So he said, yeah, that would be great. And so I put a package together. They took a bid from a different member of the department who I don't even know where he came into it because he never talked to me. And the chief had said to me, I want you to handle all of that stuff. The next thing I know, he went to the chief on his own and got it. But the fact of the matter is we started using it for after action. And so it was a good thing for me. I could stay involved, but I just couldn't fight fire or anything like that. I was there to shoot the video. And when when we got up to the Syracuse area, the chief of that department, I sat down and spoke with him about an after action review. And we put a new, it was the first time the VHS-C cassettes came out and put a system together. And it was being carried on our heavy rescue. I would drive to the scene. I'd have permission to drive to the scene, shoot it, and then we'd use it, set up a review at the drill at the next drill following the incident. And I can't tell you, even in its early stages back there in 1980 and then 85, how valuable the two chiefs, different departments, nowhere near each other, they found those videos to review what we did on the scene. And now I was the only camera person, so I had to run around as best I could while still hobbling on the leg with a bad knee. But they really found a benefit for that. And I think we've seen over time, we can go back to something as simple as Sesame Street, that when... If you try just to teach a little kid doing that, do something in your home, they may not want to do it, have any interest. But all of a sudden you put a puppet with it with a cute voice and they're trying to help you to be safe or help you to take care of it. That always became popular. And now, you know, it's a multi-billion dollar organization that still is used early versions of Sesame Street are still being used today in educational situations because of the way it connected with the targeted audience. Now, of course, we can't all just look for an audience of six-year-olds. although we often have to, because the drivers that are in the court session or whatever were acting like six-year-olds rather than 36-year-olds. But the fact is that if your department, law enforcement, fire rescue, EMS, you do not have some sort of action reviews for major incidents or troublesome incidents, and successful incidents, by the way. You know, not every response is a disaster. Not every response is, oh, best thing since sliced bread. They're always in between. But we have to be dedicated to the task, what our task is on that scene. And then after action review helps as a group to review, not pointing fingers at anybody, but seeing where we could have been stronger or done something a little bit different or been more prepared, whatever, we learn from it. Luckily, I spoke to both those chiefs that I didn't want to see them start yelling at somebody in the after action meeting. We were there to learn. That's what we're there for, to learn it. And I don't care how many times they had to review it, because again, viewing systems, I was running the first portable VHS system that Panasonic had put out. And it didn't have a lot of bells and whistles, but I was able to make do what I could. And if sometimes I have to play the same loop like 6, 7, 8 times before everybody says, oh, now I get it. But you know what? If they got the message on the 6th time or the 7th time, they got the message. That's what I cared about. And I think that, folks, if you're interested in bringing safer information about auto crashes, people injured on scene, property damage on scene, anything like that, then you're going to want the details and learn how to gather the details and the info that you can feed either into your emergency services director in your community, or share it if you're friends with one of the officers or friends with the chief, share it with them. Nobody says it has to be typed up and formal and stuff like that. Give them the information that you think would help them in a similar case at a later date, because that's how we learn. You know, one of the things when I teach my students for learning to be prepared for a bar mitzvah, a bat mitzvah, I tell them, I will never ask you to memorize anything. Well, why not? I can memorize a lot. I said, but what do you learn when you memorize? They said, what do you mean? I said, well, because when I was in 5th grade, I was assigned part, we were doing the Emancipation Proclamation, and I was given the first paragraph. So I worked, my parents were wonderful. They helped me. I memorized every single word, every comma, every period. I had it down to it. So after I recited the whole thing, the teacher suddenly come up with, so what did you learn from that? I said, what? Well, what did you learn from what you memorized? I didn't learn anything. I memorized the words. I didn't learn anything. I have no idea what it's talking about, really. And she goes, oh, I didn't mean it to be that way. And I said, yeah, I know. I know it, teacher. I just want to tell you that. You can't expect people to learn from memorization. They don't learn. It's just put in there, and hopefully they can recall it on the old hard drive in the back of the head that hasn't gone south yet. So I think that we need to somehow get the welcome, put out the welcome mat for our citizens in our communities. Ask them, you know, would you like to, we're trying to put this committee together in our community to help all of us. Would you be interested? And see, if you don't ask, you'll never get an answer. Okay? If you do ask, you'll either get a no or yes, or tell me more about it. How often do you have to meet there? Is it every week? No, it's maybe 3 times a year or 4 times a year. unless there's an emergent situation. And that works. Same thing we do with the kids. Don't memorize it, learn it. And I think we can do, we can afford that methodology to adults as well. We just have to, you know, I think we just have to entice them to want to participate. So it means that it's going to do a little public recruiting through maybe your local cable channel, local radio thing. You know, hey, folks, if you have a DJ, especially in your community or the greater community that you really like and you're friends with them, you know, ask them if they'll drop a dime and say, do an announcement about a possible TIM committee coming to the community. You're not gonna, not everybody's gonna say yes, but not everybody's gonna say no. Because we all know that in our communities, there are those who care very much, those who care some, and those who don't care at all, anything outside of their purview. That's life. We're not out to change that. We're just out to try to convince people to play a role in making the streets and their community a little bit safer with just keeping eyes and ears open. Does the Respond to Safety Institute have ideas and examples of what people can do to try to bring other people into that interest in the TIM situation?
Yeah, we've got a couple of things. There has been a learning module on our learning network about TIM committees for 5 or 6 years. And we just recently completed producing a video about TIM committees, their value, the benefits of the TIM committees, and highlighting some of the TIM committees around the country that are operating on a regular basis. And one of the committees that is prominently depicted in the video is the Delaware Valley Regional Planning Commission operates a series of TIM committees around the greater Philadelphia area, going as far west, I guess, as Chester County, including some of the New Jersey counties on the other side of the river. Each of those counties now has their own individual TIM committee, kind of under the wing of the Delaware Valley Regional Planning Commission, that's done a great job of pulling those committees together and providing them some guidance to get started and then supporting their activities as time goes on. So the video is relatively new. It runs about 15 to 20 minutes and highlights all of the things that I've talked about and the benefits and value of TIM committees, and gives an example of some committees that are operating and being very effective at their job. And then we also have a couple of training modules that are on the Learning Network, all available for free, by the way, on respondersafety.com. That can give you some guidance about what a TIM committee is, how to establish one if you don't have one in your area, and the kind of activities and communication collaboration that can come out of those committees if they meet periodically on a regular basis.
You know, as a longtime phrase has been around, and it's very apropos here, that if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
Absolutely.
Now, we know that there are going to be people who just don't want to have anything to do with a TIM thing or anything to deal with how they should learn to drive or how they should drive safely and properly. They don't care about it. They have other things much more important to them than their lives, family's lives, or strangers' lives. They just want to get where they're going to go as fast as they can get there, and they will do whatever they have to do to weave through traffic. Going to a doc's appointment last week, I was on a community road, two lanes on each side. And there was a guy, I caught him in a glance out of my rearview mirror. And I just thought I must have missed a kid just trying to go through the vehicles, whether he was on a board or what. But all of a sudden, then I saw a knot, and it was a car. And it was just no signals, just honking the horn, weaving in between, cutting people off, hit two cars with dimples, but didn't stop. He just kept going and doing that. And then about 4 or 5 minutes later, most of us are still stuck in traffic, and all of a sudden we hear sirens, and I see a blue light in my rearview mirror. And it was both the county sheriff and the state police coming after this guy. And they brought other people in and asked some of us who were still pulled over and stuff like that what we saw. Told them what we saw. That's what it is. I couldn't say that it was that man in particular, but I could see what the car did. And I think just that little part, I drove away feeling that I helped law enforcement in some little way to stop this guy from doing what he was doing, because it was just bound to get worse. On the other hand, you know, we have to be fair and say sometimes there are people who are too careful when they're driving and they don't go more than 30 miles an hour in a 65 zone. They know how to quite stay within the lines that well. And I'm not talking about impaired driving. I'm just saying they're nervous drivers. And if you haven't seen one, you haven't been driving long, because in this day and age, you see them crawling out of the woodwork to do that. And I'm sure these are the things that you guys hear all the time at the Institute, is that we're working, we're trying to do it. And this is what's going on. And that's what they're doing. Don't get caught up with the negative side. Focus on what could be the better side, and to make it safer in your community, safer in your city, safer in your state, safer in your region. Because, you know, look at, we have some big states in this country, but some of them are just thinly, other than a couple of big cities, they're all sparsely populated. But they still need, they're entitled to be able to drive safely, whether they're driving a combine down the road or they're driving their pickup truck or a sedan down the road. They still are entitled to be able to drive safely and not be forced into any particular thing. And I know that, especially from some of the scenes that I've stopped at in the last, let's say, 5 years, I've had people where I've stopped traffic crawl up onto the center right where the guardrail is, dividing the north and south of the east and west versions, and they climb up there and go around the accident and everything because they can. I didn't get that memo that I could do that, you know, when I was stuck in traffic. I didn't get the memo that I could just pull over into the median in the middle and push everybody out of my way and just get along with what I want to do. And how, that's the other thing. How do we, if we have people who want to participate in a TIM, the community, how do we get the community to buy in to what the TIM committee is trying to teach and share? Not to take anybody's rights away, but just to give everybody the right to drive safely.
In this day and age, we have plenty of video evidence of how not to do things at incident scenes. A lot of police cars are now equipped with dash cameras that capture some of these secondary crashes. Everybody has a cell phone these days, and it's incredible some of the things that they catch on video. But there are plenty of examples, video examples, that we use in training to emphasize and reinforce the teaching points that we have out there and to show people what's happening around the country. And in some ways, part of our efforts are slowed down sometimes when people don't perceive that they have the same exposure or risk as an event that may have occurred that caused a fatality or injury. If it doesn't happen locally to them, it's not as personal and they don't feel it. One of the things that we try to do in our training is share what's going on around the country in the hopes that people will learn from the bad experiences that others have suffered over time to prevent this similar type of incident occurring in their area. And video examples go a long way in getting that message across.
This question may not, you can choose not to answer it because it might not be appropriate here. But if a community wanted a couple of people from the Responder Safety Institute to come out and talk with them about TIMS. Does that cost the community?
Now, the nice thing now, Steve, is every state in the country has a dedicated resource who coordinates TIM training in that state. And there are TIM trainers in every state in the country. And the program is available nationwide for free in a variety of different ways. You can request an instructor-like class where you'll get a live audience and an instructor together. We always recommend to try and make it multidisciplinary if possible. Or you can do it online. There's online training available on the same subjects through the National Highway Institute or through ResponderSafety.com. Some states have their own online training programs related to the TIM subject. So yes, for the most part, the training is available free nationwide in a variety of different ways. And the Federal Highway Administration has a list of points of contact in each of the states around the country that you can reach out to, whatever state you're in, to request an instructor for a training class. And then you work directly with them to coordinate a date, time, and location.
Well, that's good to know, because I'm sure some of our viewers and listeners were thinking, you know, I'd like to try that, but how much is it going to cost us? And now they know it doesn't cost them a penny. They can go through the resources, bring something to the community, show people where they can go, like the Responder Safety Institute, respondersafety.com. And by the way, folks, whether you're looking to start a TIM or not in your community, you should, if you're a first responder of any level, you should visit this website, respondersafety.com, on a regular basis. Sign up for their emails. No, you don't get flooded by emails every hour and a half. Instead, you open yourself up to an amazing learning experience. And I think I remember the first time you and Todd were on, and I went to it. It says it's like a college class on TV, because listening to the two of you during that first interview, I learned so much more than I thought I knew. And I've become a fairly regular drop in there at the website, because I still do what I still do. Can't do it as limberly as I once did, but if I can help somebody who's injured or hurt or sick, then that's what I'm going to do. As Jack said, some of us are born with this one wire in a deep, dark place of our brain that says, I want to help people. And that's what we look to do. And some of us do get to be firefighters, law enforcement officers. Some of us get to be EMTs, paramedics, or a combination of any of them together. And it's great to do it when you're wearing that uniform. But there are many callings in life. I know, watching NCIS as much as I do, a Marine is always a Marine. And once a first responder, you're always a first responder. If you took pride in your service as a volunteer firefighter or career firefighter, part pay, paid on call, and it's important to you what you learned and how you help people, because we all have two wallets that we carry in our pockets as first responders. All the good calls we had, the baby delivery, I only had one in 8 years, in the ambulance. But it's amazing. How about giving a full arrest, bringing them back, they're viable on their own. There is nothing like that. My first time, I almost had to do 12 minutes by myself. Nobody else was there yet. I was just doing CPR, and when the other team came in, they hooked him up. He was breathing, and he had a pretty decent rhythm. And the captain pat me on the shoulder. He says, okay, step out. Let somebody else come in now and watch him. And I just burst into crying because that guy was back to life. And thank God, while I was in that community, he was still going when I left. So there's nothing like the feeling if you care about others that you get when you help somebody else. And, you know, there are lots of name calling and stuff like that. Are you too old for that crap? No, I'm not. I'll be too old for that crap when I don't see the sun anymore. Then I'll be in a much better place, I hope. But the fact is that there are so many learning opportunities for you on respondersafety.com. You can set the depth you want to learn too. That's a wonderful thing. You don't have to do this or have to do that one. Look what's interesting to you. What's your goal? You have to set a goal for yourself. What do you want to do? Do you want to be able to help other people directly, or do you want to help your community with a couple of small committees that handle this part of the teaching, that part of the teaching, and that part of the teaching? Any of that's still good. You just have to remember, that's what happens when you're a landscape guy and you don't have the syncopated calendars. But the fact is that most of us aspire to be something better. Doesn't mean we're not good now. Just want to do something better. And helping a neighbor, helping the person across the street, helping a little kid you see fall on the sidewalk and scrape his or her knee, and you give them a little TLC, and they're better. That's what you get from being part of this. But most importantly, as adults, when you participate, you're helping your community to become a safer place for pedestrians and for drivers and for others that are just coming through the community. And that should be your goal. You don't get paid for it. You're doing it out of the goodness of your heart to bring safety and sensibility to your community. And I can't think of a better way of doing it than doing some study. Doesn't cost you anything at respondersafety.com. As Jack said, there are lots of courses there. Lots of courses about what we're talking about today. The TIM, the Traffic Incident Management Teams. Okay? It's a lot you could do with that in your community. No matter if you're a huge municipality or you're a small little village, there is still things you can do that you can learn about and learn for at respondersafety.com, and you can share that with the other people in your community and so make a suggestion to them that maybe they might find this interesting too, because you both have the same interest of watching out for these people who run up on the sidewalks. You've seen that a few times in your community, so you want to have some help with it. Go to respondersafety.com, learn what you can there. If you need help, Jack, Todd, a bunch of people will be there. You can send an email. They will get back to you to provide help, recommendations, etc. You have to be willing to make it a two-way street. They will teach, and you must agree to learn. If you can do that, then you're going to help your community. Because you want to, pardon using an old Food Channel pun, you want to kick it up a notch, the safety in your community. The people who walk, people and use conveyances like wheelchairs, crutches, you want them to be safe. You want your kids to be safe when they ride their bikes over to the park just around the corner from the house. Because once they're out of sight, you have no idea what a car could do to them at that point. So that's something else you can focus on. How to protect the kids who go to the park and get home, and for them to get home safely as well. Jack, once again, I can't thank you enough. This is so eye-opening. And like I said, when I saw the email back last, in the middle of last month, about a real big push on Tim teams, I just knew I had to reach out to have you folks address it, because sadly, again, a lot of people don't know the good stuff they have at hand. They just not, they don't realize it. And so our job has to be to educate them. And I think what I'm going to plan on doing is, I think I'm going to set up a page on our website for Respond to Safety. Put a few pictures there, and then put a link that will take them directly to the to your website. And they can see there just how many courses and the coverage of what these courses offer. You know, we're not talking about how to be a safe driver. We talk about that all the time. But this is above, and let's say that I'll give the word that most of us want to be safe drivers. Yeah, sometimes we go a little bit too fast and we bring ourselves down, etc. But most of us want that. Question is, how do we get others? How do we entice others to join that with us to make our communities safer? Because as Jack said at the beginning, it's whether it's an accident, on a crash on the road, a crash over and outside the road, meaning it climbs up to the curb, to the sidewalk, or to grass, someplace else, anything like that. You need to know the safest way to act. First thing, I think Jack and everybody on the team there would say, first thing, if you see that, notify law enforcement or fire rescue right away. First, do that. Make sure that somebody's called that call in. I've been very lucky that a lot of the calls I've stopped at, somebody's there with a phone and they said, do you need anything? Yeah, I said, call 911 and tell them we need both fire rescue and EMS here at the scene. And I've even called on a couple of trauma alerts after really bad accidents. And I have the police officer there. I said, call in a trauma alert. We're going to need to get them there because they have real traumatic injuries. So you don't have to be a paid firefighter or even a volunteer firefighter. You don't have to be a police officer. You don't have to be anything but a person who cares about their family, their neighbors, and their community at large to make it a safer and better place for people to travel, however they travel in your community. But by whatever means they travel, you want them to be safe. You want your family to be safe, and you want the people you live with to be safe as well. And this is a relatively simple and basically free way of learning that without paying a tuition or anything like that. You get to learn at your own pace. You don't finish a class the first time you sit down. Okay, come back and do it again. Finish it off the next time around. There's no penalties for that. Respond to Safety Network is absolutely focused on making our lives safer. Now, we're not talking about in the kitchen, stuff like that. We're talking about when we move, driving our vehicles, walking in our communities, stuff like that. That's what this is all about. And you just may not know it, but just that class might allow you to save somebody's life. And I can tell you from experience, as will Jack, that you will never see a family more grateful when you've helped somebody in their family who's been hurt or worse. So That's what you bring to the table when you sign up for this. Again, the website is respondersafety.com. There are menus of what's available for you. We're asking you to probably please take a look at the TIM training, see what that's all about. So if that's interesting to you, reach out to your police chief or fire chief and see, do they have anything for that? Did maybe you could open up for classes for other people to come in and join. If they do, they do. If they don't, doesn't mean the earth's going to stop spinning and huge boulders are going to fall from the sky. It just means you just find another little avenue. But if you're dedicated to the task, you'll do that. So again, Jack, thank you so much, especially for really explaining the TIM concept and how important it is. You know, we have all these letters that are pushed together to mean this, mean that, or another thing. This TIM means hopefully saving lives and saving people from injuries, primary. And all, you know what? And that includes the driver who's driving like an idiot, but we want that driver to be safe too. They may not have obeyed the rules, but we don't want them to be hurt because we get nothing from that. The community doesn't get anything. We learn nothing from that. Our goal is to make our community safer. That's what we have to think about. So my friend, another time to part comes our way. It is always exhilarating to listen to you. It is one of my favorite times to learn with a guest, and that is with you and Todd. I guess I could sit here and listen to you guys for a couple of hours, just talk about all the efforts that the Respond to Safety Institute is bringing out and expanding it beyond just our emergency responders, but letting these lessons apply to every driver, every pedestrian, and all play a part. You just have to say, I want to make my community better. That's it. Any parting words, my friend?
Steve, we appreciate the support and helping to get the message out. I'll close with a couple of more websites that you might want to include.
Sure.
Reportstruckby.com.
Hold on.
That's all one word. Reportstruckby.com is the page that we have set up.
Report.
Struck by.
Reportstruckby.com.
We'll take you directly to the page for recording crashes involving emergency responders so that we can get more and better data. And our good friend Joel Feldman has put together an excellent website to help prevent distracted driving. His website is endddd.org. He's abbreviated for End Distracted Driving. His organization has an awful lot of materials that adults and parents can use to train the younger generation about preventing distracted driving. And I can send you these websites by email so that you can reproduce in some place.
Yeah, I'll put them right in the show notes. So that's endd.com.
.org. O-R-G.
Oh, dot org. Okay, like our company is. Okay. Yeah, so enddistracteddriving.org. Okay. Yeah. Now I got it. Well, and folks, we will put those these websites in the show notes for you. Again, our sincere thanks to Jack Sullivan, not just for being here with us today, but for all the work that he and the whole crew at Responders.
Yeah, it's not just me. There's a whole team of people in the background that are helping to make this stuff available to everybody.
And we want to send our thanks to all of them because some are remunerated, some aren't. They just do it because they want to help. And again, that's where the goodness is born, when you do something not because you're getting paid for it, because it's going to create something better than the status quo of what you're discussing about. We'll have all these websites in the show notes. And please give all our thanks to the team at Respond to Safety Institute. We appreciate it. And we couldn't have that without our friends at CVV FA as well. Our friends at Cumberland Valley Volunteer Firefighters Association.
Right.
And they were the ones who helped give birth to Respond to Safety Institute. And the workers there now are just carrying that ball as far as they can to get the information out to communities and people all over the country. Because you know what? 50 some odd thousand vehicular deaths on highways is far too many. Well, what would you find to be the solution, folks? Ask yourself that question. 50 plus thousand people die in our roadways and highways every year. How does that strike you? What if it's someone in your family? What would you do about it? Ask those questions of yourself when you're looking in the mirror. You know why I tell you to look in the mirror? Because the guy or gal in the mirror never lies. They know every bit of truth. So while the human you might make an excuse, the inner you in that image in the mirror doesn't make up anything. They know everything you've done. Yeah, even when you took those couple of beers from your dad's ice cooler. You know, that person knows that too. Jack, be well, be safe, my friend. And it turns out now it looks like we're going to be back for season 9. I hadn't planned on it with my health, but when my wife told me she was going back to work another year, which wasn't part of the plan, well, I just can't sit here twiddling my thumbs. So it looks like we're going to have to kick off season 9 in mid-August. But I'd love to have you and Todd both back again about 6 months in. Let's see what changes are coming through and are we making improvements? And maybe we'll make it a free webinar for people to come on to and something like that. But
Thanks, Steve. We appreciate the invitation.
It's a necessity. We all have to work together to get this message out to the people. And working together as a team makes that effort a little easier because we know that there are people dedicated like we are to make this a better place. And they have our backs too. So again, our thanks to Jack Sullivan. We will be back, and I believe next week, I got to check the calendar. I believe next week with another episode of 5-Alarm Task Force. You can watch for this video on our YouTube channel at maybe later this afternoon, tomorrow at the earliest. And then we'll have the audio, as I said, probably by the weekend at the latest. Thanks for tuning in. If you're watching the video, this will be the end of the video. If you're listening to the audio version, well, you know we're going to have another segment or two coming on about some other stuff and some other more public safety announcements for our listeners and our viewers right after this word. But to those of you who are on the video, thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. Stay safe and stay well. And as always, let's take care of each other. Bye-bye now.
Drinking and driving is a serious problem that threatens everyone on the road. About 112 million times a year, U.S. adults drink too much and get behind the wheel. The number of drinking and driving episodes has been decreasing, but the danger is still very real. Crashes involving alcohol-impaired drivers kill nearly 11,000 people each year. If you're drinking, designate a non-drinking driver before you even start. Call a cab or get a ride home. Never let friends drink and drive. Even if you don't drink and drive, always wear your seatbelt and encourage everyone in the car to buckle up too. Seatbelts reduce the risk of serious injuries and death in a crash by 50%. And it's the law. Remember, driving drunk is never okay. Choose not to drink and drive and help others to do the same. To learn more, visit cdc.gov/vital signs. Brought to you by the Centers for Disease Control, your local first responders, and 5-Alarm Task Force.
You're listening to 5-Alarm Task Force. We're really glad to have you listening to Five Alarm Task Force. But wait, we also want you to know that there are other terrific fire rescue podcasts available. Here's our short list. Number one, Beneath the Helmet with Chief Arjuna George. Number two, The Professional Brotherhood with Chief Brian Soller. The Five-Tool Firefighter with Nick Higgins of the Firehouse Tribune. Station Talk with Chief Tom Marciano. DTFF, Down to Fight Fire with British Columbia Volunteers. Better Every Shift with Aaron Zamzow. Firefighter Success with Captain Jim Moss. Code 3, The Firefighters Podcast. Make Do with Nick Peppard and Sean Duffy. Getting Salty. Fit to Fight Fire. And our newest one, Into the Unknown, with Tonya Mantooth, Randy Mantooth, and Kevin Tighe as they talk about the real inside story of becoming paramedics back in the early days and what it's like and important to them today. Remember, to be a great firefighter, you must always be willing to learn. This message is brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force Corp. One mission, one family, first responders helping each other.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
And that wraps this episode of Five Alarm Task Force, brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission, first responders helping each other. We'd like to thank our guest, Jack Sullivan of the Responder Safety Institute, for joining us to discuss ways we can be safer on the road and the advantages of TIMS, Traffic Incident Management Teams. Did you know you can find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for Five Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training LLC, the Firehouse Tribune, and LifeScan Wellness Centers, as well as our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Thin Red Line Decon, Hass Alert, Pry Guy Levers and Nesta Bars, Silver Arrow Coaching and Consulting, Crackle Magazine, the EFT Corporation, Health KPI, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to info@5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. You can follow us on Twitter, otherwise known as X, and Instagram at 5alarmtaskforce. On Facebook at facebook.com/5, in all upper cases, Apple, A Apple, T Tango, F Foxtrot, C Charlie. And on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel, 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcasts, our new nonprofit foundation, and our blog on our website, www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.